A few weeks ago, we heard a sermon by Mr. Dowd on encouragement. And that day, he reminded us of many things, but basically, he reminded us how important it is for us to be encouragers of others. And he's talked at length as to why God expects that of us. I want to speak on a topic that we've heard about many times before over the years, but over the last few weeks, as I was pondering a sermon topic, it really has come to light to me that this is something that I need to work on even more, and maybe in my message you might see some points that might help you as well. My message today is going to be on respect. When we look around us in society today and we see how people are living, we see how people are interacting, it's just, you can see that people are becoming increasingly rude and just mad, angry all the time. And we understand that we are products of the civilization that we live in. And like that toad that's in the boiling water, he doesn't realize he's in that water until it's too late. We too can be a victim of our society and that we live in and maybe succumb to some of those things. But the title of my message is Worthy of Special Regard, and I'm going to ask, what does that mean to you? The full definition of my topic, respect, is specifically says to consider worthy of high or special regard. Last week, I was with some friends up north, and we were talking, the men and I, one evening, and last Sabbath evening, and we were saying, you know, one guy said, I need your prayers. He says, I'm having more trouble with just getting mad when I'm driving. Road rage, if you will. You know, I'm driving and people are tailgating me and they're driving like idiots. And, you know, he's just explaining and talking to us as men, can you pray for me on that? And the rest of us men were kind of looking at each other going, yeah, me too. I didn't used to think some of those things. I didn't used to act this way. I didn't used to have those feelings of getting angry so much. What about you? 40 years ago or so, some of you might remember this, comedian Rodney Dangerfield made a living with this famous statement saying, I don't get no respect. And people at the time found it very funny because they looked at the world we lived in 40 years ago and they said, well, that's something that's woefully lacking in American society. Just look, if you take a step back, just look at the last 5 years, how things have changed in the world that we live in. You know, the examples of disrespect are endless. We can start with just the political news that we hear every day. People from both sides saying terrible things about each other, acting in ways that they should be ashamed of, you know, how they're acting. We look at children's behavior in schools and at home. We look to satire, political cartoons. We look to the way people dress, whether it be for church or for work or for other formal occasions. The way people treat each other in all situations. Again, the list is endless. On the road, how people drive. In the store, you know, how people talk to each other. You know, how people talk about someone else when they're not there. I think this all probably sounds very familiar to all of us. And I do believe, though, as I talk to some of my staff, as I see them at times behaving in a way that is disrespectful, I try to help them understand what they're doing and why it's wrong. And unfortunately, many of them don't really know what respect is. This is how they've been raised. This is the society that I live in. This is the town I live in, I hear, when I hear about them talking about Racine. I think they don't understand what it is, and specifically don't understand how important it is. Again, the definition of respect, two definitions. One is to consider worthy of high or special regard. It also goes on to say in Webster's dictionary, it refers to a mental outlook that affects how we live our lives and what we say and what we do. How about you? How are you doing in this? I find myself, as I got deeper into this message, saying, I'm not doing as good as I thought I was. How about you? Let's talk about this. We understand, again, that one of the most important lessons of the Christian life is the fact that we are all to, in varying degrees, as I said earlier, products of the age in which we live. And as everyone in this room, I believe, is trying very hard to live a life that's more pleasing to God every day, I think it behooves all of us to consider the importance of respect and just how to maintain respect every day in our lives. Now, I'll state again, the object of my sermon is to explain the principle, not to give us each do's and don'ts of how we should or shouldn't act, or what we say, how we talk, or how we shouldn't. But rather, we're going to look at probably a few more scriptures than we typically do in a sermon, because I want to really look at God's word today and see what he has to say, you know, to look at what the expectation that he has for us. And one way I want to look at it as we start is to just kind of start looking through the Ten Commandments. We'll go through each of them and just see how each one of them really, how respect is a key component of the Ten Commandments. And we'll start by saying, obviously, that the first four are showing address respect for God. And we know that, as with many commandments, or with all the commandments, but specifically when we talk about respecting God, loving him, showing him that we are his, putting him first in our life every day, that that's something that we have to get right. It's not, well, you're getting better, you're doing okay, right? God expects us to work on it every day. He expects us to figure it out, to grow closer to him every day. And he expects us to consider him as worthy. We understand that God is worthy of our highest and most special regard. The tricky part is we don't always remember that that's true and expected of us at all times and in all situations. That time when we hit our thumb with the hammer really bad, you know, maybe I'm the only one that didn't have good thoughts in their mind. Or that guy that's driving down the highway like someone we'd like to have a close chat with. That's, you know, I didn't used to think like that sometimes. Again, we must consider God as worthy of the highest and most special regard at all times and in all situations. And as we look today, specifically, he tells us that in the first two commandments. The first one, it says to us to put God, it tells us basically to put God below anyone or anything else is really just blatant disrespect for him. Turn, if you would, over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. We'll start in verse 4. Reading here out of the New King James Version. I am going to, throughout the sermon, refer to some other versions of it, but right now we'll just worry about the New King James for this. Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 4, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." Verse 5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart." That could be just a sermon in itself. How can we do that? How do we, and helping us understand that we have to love the God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength. There's so many distractions. So many things that take our focus away from God every day. So many things that need to be done. How do we do that? And we haven't come up with that formula that we can share yet, right? How we do that, to love God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength. It says, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them," verse 7, "diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." Again, that part of being in our hearts and our minds at all times, in our soul, with all our strength. We understand, too, as I mentioned earlier a little bit, that taking God's name in vain is another example of disrespect for him. And that's, if you talk to many people, I have a friend of mine that he's getting better, but when I'm with him, sometimes I have to remind him because I don't think he could talk a full sentence without using a profanity. You know, and he works on it when I'm with him, but you've known people like that. That's a society. And how easy it is at times to not think and say and use those words ourselves. The Jewish Study Bible says this. It says, a false oath would show contempt for God by implying that the swearer does not fear his punishment. I liked how that was put. What about coming here, if we look at the second commandment, what about coming before God on the Sabbath day? Right, we get it. We understand that it's not just a day of rest. You know, that Friday night when sunset comes, you go, oh, finally, I made it. It's really been a bad week. I'm not going to think about work. I'm not going to talk about work. But it's more than that. God gave us the Sabbath as a day of rest, and that is such a wonderful gift. But it's not just a day of rest. It's a day where we focus on God. We focus on that day to show honor to Him and to respect God, to show Him respect. Turn over to Isaiah 58, verse 13, if you would, please. Isaiah 58 and verse 13, again out of the New King James Version. Isaiah 58, verse 13 says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight. Again, this is God's holy day, not just the day of rest. From doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. That's something that I find myself often struggling with. I get here with friends, and we have wholesome conversations, and then, you know, we talk about lots of things, but not things I think are always appropriate for the Sabbath, as we're trying to catch up. It's easy to do. The Tanakh says this: if you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, I like how that's put. We don't want to show disrespect to God in any way. I kind of think of this, if you refrain from trampling on the Sabbath, it's kind of the respect you have for your neighbor when you walk into their house with dirty shoes and you look at the carpet and you take your shoes off first. You don't want to trample on their carpet. Well, even more so, we do not want to trample on the Sabbath. Again, we're to honor God in special ways on this day. To refrain from our own thoughts, to put our thoughts on God, to talk to people and have wholesome conversations, to encourage them, like Mr. Dowd said last week, to build people up, to show them respect. When we think about this also with our own words, how easy is it sometimes to, well, I don't know how easy it is, but how many times have you caught yourself saying something about a person that might not be as respectful as it could be? It's easy. You know, I had staff I was talking to recently, and they said, well, they were disrespectful to me first. Well, yeah, I get that. I feel that way sometimes. But again, this is what God expects of us. We're not just anybody. God has selected us. He's handpicked us, and He has high expectations of us. The same verse I just read, Isaiah 58, 13, I'd like to read to you out of a couple other versions. First, the NET version. NET Bible version says, you must observe the Sabbath rather than doing anything you please on my holy day. You must look forward to the Sabbath and treat the Lord's holy day with respect. You must treat it with respect by refraining from your normal activities and by refraining from your selfish pursuits and from making business deals. So that's another version I like. From the Complete Jewish Bible, Isaiah 58, 13, it says, if you hold back your foot from on Shabbat from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call Shabbat a delight, Adonai's holy day worth honoring, then honor it by not doing your usual things or pursuing your interests or speaking about them. I like that version. Basically, three categories. Refraining from your normal activities. We're probably pretty good about that. You know, we aren't going to work. We're not checking all our work emails. We're not doing some of those things, right? We're not necessarily mowing the lawns or doing those kinds of things. Point two, it says, of the categories, was refraining from selfish or personal pursuits. You know, I love to play golf. I love to fish, and I love to hunt. But I choose not to pursue that on God's Sabbath. Not doing your own thing. What about you or those hobbies that you have? You try to refrain from doing them on God's Sabbath day. Or number three, talking about these things. I get with some people and we talk about deer hunting. We talk about fishing. We talk about lots of things. Nothing bad, but not necessarily focused on God. I have to work on that. What about you? Turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 again. We'll read verses 5 and 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 5 and 6. And those of you who know me, I've told you many times, I'll just say it again. This is not a corrective sermon by any means. This is something that I'm working on, and maybe what I'm working on might be helpful to you as well. Deuteronomy 6, verse 5 and 6. It says, verse 5, you shall love the Lord your God again with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And verse 6, and these words which I command you today, loving God shall be in your heart. Is it? Every day, at all times. When your boss says, I don't like that. Do something else. Or he comes up with what you think might be a silly idea. It's hard to take. I personally find it's hard on my ego when somebody corrects me. I don't like it. And even though I do need to be corrected, I don't like it. It's hard on my ego. What about you? I don't think respectful things. You can write down Matthew 12, verse 34. The New Living Translation says this, whatever is in your heart determines what you say. Or at least determines what you think. You say, you know, I've justified it and say, well, at least I didn't say what I was thinking. Right? I was still thinking it, but I didn't say it, so maybe that was something better. Matthew 12. Let's turn over there, please. Matthew chapter 12. We'll read this in the New King James Version this time. We'll start in verse 34. It says, Matthew 12, verse 34, it says, brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? Again, for out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, as the New Living Translation said, for whatever is in your heart determines what you say. Going on in verse 35, it says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word that men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. It kind of gives me pause for thought. What about you? By your words you will be judged. How do we put that into action, right? I'm not going to give you a list of do's and don'ts because I don't know what they are, but simply I want to explain the principle and let you determine how you have to implement that in your life, because God says, I'm going to judge you by what you say. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter where, God's watching us, right? He has expectations of us. He's called us out. He expects us to be different. Not to succumb to what we're in, this environment that we're in, not to succumb to society. Again, if we look at, as we look at the principle of the Sabbath is to honor God by making the Sabbath a special day, by refraining from our normal daily routine, and by concentrating on activities and thoughts and messages and conversations that show respect for God. And they help us draw closer to Him. They help us reconnect with Him if need be. And it shows that we appreciate what He does for us. Again, that's the general principle. What does the Bible have to say? There are a few specifics that we can look at. Turn over, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 4. First Corinthians 11, verse 4. It says, every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. I did some looking in the some of the commentaries to see what they're saying about this. And one comment they said is that this is probably the origin of a long-standing tradition in our culture for men to remove their caps or hats to show respect, like during the national anthem or during a prayer. Something along those lines. It goes on to say that bowing the head and kneeling are also gestures of respect. That's what I heard an attorney this week on the news. I'll digress. He was talking about the NFL players and their refusal, many of them, to stand during the national anthem, and they're kneeling instead. And the attorney for those players was saying that's their way of showing respect. And he quoted this, that is another way. And it might be, but that's not what's in their hearts at this point. We know that, right? Standing, it says, then here's another gesture of respect. You know, when if you look at a courtroom, when the judge enters the courtroom, people are supposed to stand. Or when someone enters a room, often people will stand to greet them. Turn over, if you would, to Matthew 22. We're going to talk just a little bit about dress. And it, I want to use this here, Matthew 22, verses 2 through 14, as just one way to introduce or to talk about this. Last Sabbath, when I was with my friends up north, John Yule, many of you know John, he's an elder serving in La Crosse. On his first day that he attended church, I was still attending La Crosse. This has been now 20 years ago, he came and he sat in the back row with his wife, and he was in shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops. And first time he'd ever been there, wasn't a big deal. Well, the pastor, the visiting pastor that day, was given a sermon, and he was a pretty fiery guy. And he said, and one thing I just can't stand, people showing disrespect for God, coming to church casually. And he's going through wearing shorts and this and that, and one of the other elders is in the back going, stop. We got a visitor. Mr. Yule didn't take it wrong. He said, oh, and he did better next time. But it was kind of a funny sitting there going, oh, no, this guy's not going to ever come back. Matthew 22, though, I want to read this. This is the parable of the wedding feast. And while the main lesson in what we're going to read is not about how to dress, it does show a biblical precedent for proper attire. Well, let's read this, understanding that overall, this is discussing the kingdom of God. Let's start in verse 2. The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. Again, we understand this. God calls people, and many are not interested. They don't respond. Again, he sent out other servants, tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding. He wants people to come. God wants us in his kingdom. He wants us to figure it out in this life and be a part of his kingdom. But they made light of it, and they went their own ways. They were, in this case, they were disrespectful. One to his own farm, another to his business. Verse 6, and the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their cities. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding. In verse 10, so those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both bad and good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. In verse 11, when the king came in to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. And so he said to them, friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Verse 13, then the king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen. Again, my point is, this is not on how to dress, but it does set a precedent here. He noticed the person, in this case, if we look at it not metaphorically, not dressed appropriately for the time. I came across a statement that said this. This was stated by a lady by the name of Liz Cursus out of the State News newspaper, April 2008. She said, a person's attire is an interpretation of how he or she views the event. A person's attire is a representation or interpretation of how he or she views the event. And if you think about our culture and kind of where that's going, we've kind of gone from one ditch to the other. Think back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, men often wore suits and hats and ties everywhere. And women obviously also wore dresses and bonnets everywhere, whether they were working, whether they were playing. Today, that trend is very different. I had a lady show up for an interview a couple months ago. I do second interviews for my business. She came in her pajama bottoms. You know, the flannel, you. And I went up, and I front office, I said her name, she came up. I took her in the boardroom, and I said, you're here for an interview? She said, yes. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. What do you mean you're not interested? I said, you're wearing your pajamas. She goes, well, that's the style these days. And she wasn't very happy. But I see that a lot. And where my office window is, I have a temporary employment agency just 50 feet away. And I think to myself, well, no, I see why some of these people might be having trouble finding a job, because if they're going to show up to a job interview in their pajamas or worse, they probably are going to have trouble. But it made me think about the person's attire is an interpretation of how he or she views the event. Again, that trend today is ultra casual, and, you know, it's you never know what you're going to see. It's just different. Even from my childhood, I remember clothes that I just got broke in, and then I never saw them again because my mother threw them away. You're not wearing those in public. So it was good. She looked out for me. But it's another way of showing respect. There's an article called Dress for Respect by Irene Taylor that I want to read for you. It says the clothes we wear may not, quote unquote, make the man, but they make a definite statement about our attitude towards self and others. Business leaders recognize this and emphasize the importance of dressing for success. The way we present ourselves reflects our attitude toward life in general. We've become so casual in our dress, we think casually about events towards which respect should be shown. A lax dress code shows a lack of respect. She goes on to say, there was a time when Christians knew there was a way to be different in our manner of dress from that of the world. Christians believe the wisdom of 1 Timothy 2, verse 9, it says, in like manner that women also adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety. She goes on to say, Christian women dressed modestly, attractively, and femininely when in public and were treated with respect. Their demeanor in turn showed respect for the occasion. And this was especially true of occasions such as worship services, weddings, and funerals. Alas, such is not true today. Irene Taylor goes on to say, "While on a trip some time back, we attended worship services at two different congregations of the Lord's people. At the morning service, I found myself one of three or four ladies in a dress. At evening service, I was the only lady so attired. Imagine being conspicuous in a dress at church. The attire of the women was not even nice pantsuits, but rather ultra-casual attire one might well wear to the ballpark. Some were dressed in the same manner that formerly worn by women working in the field. And this was true of both the older and younger women. The attire was not due to a need for warmth. The season was warm. The slogans on some of the shirts were not appropriate for home, let alone church. A church service designed to pay honor and respect to God. It was not surprising that the conduct during the service fell short of the respect due God, the God of heaven." She goes on to say, "There's a principle portrayed in a beautiful hymn which used to be sung frequently," and this was in their services. It said, "Give your best to your master." That song suggested a standard which needs to be revived today. Our casual attitude towards things sacred has infiltrated more than our dress. The best that we have in dress should display respect for self and others. Too often we dress more appropriately for weddings and funerals than for our worship to the God of heaven. And I've noticed that, too. That's just how we have a society. It says, "The former is to honor a human. The latter is to honor our God. To whom among us would appear in the presence of a ruler of any nation in the same attire somewhere in the worship assembly?" Finally, she says, "Many businesses have strict dress codes, and employees know that they must confirm or be fired. Elders, church elders, should not have to instigate a dress code, but we obviously need to be reminded that our appearance does matter." And she says, I like this, she goes, "Can you visualize the uproar that would be caused if church leaders announced a dress code for worship? It is odd that we would honor regulations set forth by our business, but be offended when asked to dress appropriately on the street and in worship." Kind of talks to our society a little bit, again. There are some comments I found, too, as we talk about dress and kind of wrap that a little bit up. These are some comments written in one of Mr. Armstrong's autobiographies about how he dressed. One of them was for a daughter of the former owner of Belknap Springs. And she said at this time in his life he had one suit. It may have even had holes in it, but it was always clean and well-pressed. He wore the best he had. She says he knew from personal experience that other factors can be involved, such as economic conditions, climate, etc. But he did not subscribe to the one-size-fits-all mentality. He taught that you should wear your best to church to respect God. Again, this comes back around to the topic of today is respect. The last six commandments, then, as we talk about this further, involve our respect for each other. The first four show respect for God. The last six talk about our respect for fellow human beings. And the first of that second set, the fifth commandment, deals directly with respect. It talks about, and we won't get into it, but children having respect for parents. And I find that interesting that it comes first, because God tells us we're supposed to teach that to our children. It tells us how important it is to do that. You know, respect for God and respect for fellow human beings is a concept that we are to teach our young people. Turn over to Deuteronomy, back to Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. We'll just recap what that said. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Again, we read this earlier, but it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Verse 7, it says, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. God's instruction to us as parents, to teach our children the Ten Commandments. An unlikely source, I found a quote from J. Edgar Hoover, who had a colorful life and is also head of the FBI, but he said this. He said, a child who has been taught to respect the laws of God will have little difficulty respecting the laws of man. And many of you live in big cities or bigger cities. I live in Racine. Racine has a certain reputation. And living there, you really see it. There is no respect for especially the any authority there, the police or anything like that. It's really getting bad. But I like that quote. Any child who's been taught to respect the laws of God will have little difficulty respecting the laws of men. Well, if we look at the sixth commandment, again, it just involves respect for human life. The seventh commandment requires respect for our mate in marriage. And again, the parental example is part of that role, you know, a vital part of our teaching role, how we respect our mate in marriage. Commandment number 9 requires having a special regard for truth, right? Telling the truth at all times. And then commandments number 8 and 10 deal with respect for other people's things. Regard for and respect for what belongs to someone else. For the remainder of my message, then, I want to just consider how we show respect in some other areas of life, both as adults and as children, but things that it talks about in our Bible, things that God expects from us. And I mentioned just a little bit ago the respect for authority. We live in a culture, I don't even know how to phrase it, I don't really need to say much. We live in a culture that in which disrespect for any authority is rampant. You see, of all the things going on in the streets and just everywhere you go. But let's look at a couple scriptures to help us understand that and what the expectation is for us. Romans 13, verse 1. God expects us. He tells us that we are to pay taxes to whom taxes are due. He tells us to respect the government in place, the authority over us. Obviously not putting that before God, but we are to have respect towards that. Romans 13, verse 1. I'll read this out of the New Living Translation. It says, pay everyone what is owed. Taxes to whom taxes are due. Revenue to whom revenue is due. Respect to whom respect is due, and honor to whom honor is due. Pretty straightforward. Respect the laws of the land, it's basically telling us. Pay your taxes, pay your debts, respect other people. Another example, 1 Timothy 5, verse 1. 1 Timothy 5. Verse 1. I'll read this out of the Revised Standard Version. It says, do not speak harshly to an older man, but speak to him as a father, to younger men as brothers, to older women as mothers, to younger women as sisters, with absolute purity. It's basically saying, whoever you're going to speak to, be respectful. We had a pastor many years ago that he gave a message on respect. And at the time, you guys have been around for a while, he was very adamant that he'd never be called by his first name. He was always Mr. This is his name, and his wife was Mrs. And I'm probably old-fashioned. I kind of think that along those school of thought, you know, where I call our pastor Mr. Dowd or Mrs. Dowd. You know, we understand they're no better than us, you know, but they are in an office. They are ordained by God. One way that I think is respectful to them is to call them as Mr. or Mrs. And it kind of goes along here with this theme. Exodus 12, verse 20, verse 12. Again, I mentioned we're going to look at several scriptures. Instead of hearing my opinion about them, let's see what God says. Exodus 20 and verse 12. Really, this is where it all begins, as children, and children of all ages, I should say, too. Exodus 20, verse 12, it just says, out of the New Living Translation, it says, honor your father and mother, then you will live a long, full life in the land the Lord your God is giving you. We need to show respect to our parents, right? Respect for God and for adults by honoring them. You don't have to turn there, but I'll read it to you again. Ephesians 6, verse 2 out of the New Living Translation, it says, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you, and you will have a long life on earth. Goes on to say, verse 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. So the important point here is it's a two-way street, right? That as parents, we need to not provoke our children. It also emphasizes the importance of just parental instruction, you know, teaching them in the way that they should go, proper discipline. To help them help form the values, you know, of children, including respect. Let's turn over to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, what does it tell us? Again, these are very familiar scriptures to us. Ephesians 5 talks about submitting to one another. I'll read that out. This out of the NIV vision. Ephesians 5, verse 21. It says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So, out of respect for God, out of respect for Christ, submit to one another. Be respectful to one another. Again, authority or someone having authority is not about personalities. It's about respecting God's authority, right? It's respecting, if you look at the pastors, at the leaders of the church, it's not about respecting, it's about respecting God's authority vested in fallible humans. Because we're still going to make mistakes, you know? But God has put them in that position. Drop down to verse 33 of Ephesians 5. It says, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. How we treat each other in our marriage, our children see, right? Others see. What about employee? Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 9 talks about that. You can write that down and look about it. What about respect for the property of others? Again, in Racine, as many towns, if you leave something outside, it's probably going to walk away. It's community property, it seems. But we know that's not what God expects of us, right? A common trend that we know that we are to have is to take care of one's own property. And, well, this is kind of how community goes for people. You take care of what's yours, but you trash everyone else's. I think about rental cars down in Racine. They're having a tough time with they're coming back. Just the engines are burnt up and the tires are bald because of the way people are driving them. And they're having a tough time getting their money back. Rental homes, if you've ever been a homeowner, sometimes rentals are a real hassle because people just tear it up. They have no respect for the property. 2 Kings 6, verse 5, if you want to turn over there. Again, God has so much to say in his Bible about respect. So many areas of our life that we sometimes, I think, possibly forget or not think about. 2 Kings 6, verse 5. This is out of the NET Bible version. It says, as one of them was felling a log, the axe had dropped into the water, and he shouted, "Oh no, my master, it was borrowed." So he was upset. He borrowed something, and he broke it. He lost it. Have you ever loaned something out to someone, and it comes back, and it doesn't work anymore? It's broke? I don't know what happened. That's what I heard from the last guy. Last time I used it, it worked just fine, as it's broken too. So, again, showing respect. You borrowed something, right? Philippians 2, verse 14, you can write down. Out of the NET Bible version, I'm sorry, Philippians 2, 4. It says, each of you should be concerned not only about your own interests, but about the interests of others as well. Comes back again to that part a little bit about the sermon Mr. Dowd gave about being encouragers. We're not just worried about our own world, our own life, but what's going on in someone else's that we might encourage them, that we might help them, that we need to be concerned about. Let's look at Luke 16, starting in verse 10. Luke chapter 16 and verse 10. New King James says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. The New Living Translation says this, if you are faithful in the little things, you will be faithful in the large ones, but if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. We understand that principle. Again, we've heard that in sermons over the years. God looks at us and he gauges, are we going to be ready to be leaders in his kingdom, to be kings and priests? You know, if he gives us something and he looks at how we handle it, do we nurture that? Do we help it grow? Do we encourage? If we can't get it right now, are we going to be able to later? Drop on down to verse 12. Of Luke 16. It says, and if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? The New Living Translation says, and if you're not faithful with another person's things, why should you be entrusted with things of your own? Once again, it's about respect. It's about honoring others and what is theirs. Just a couple more areas that we'll look at here. Respect for God's creation. Let's turn back to Genesis 2, verse 15. And I just randomly picked a few areas for us to consider. You could come up with many more. But respect for God's creation. Back in Genesis 2, verse 15, in the NET Bible version, it says, the Lord God took the man and placed him in the orchard in Eden to care for it and maintain it. So the first recorded task that we have was to take care of God's creation. Here again, mankind has gone from one extreme to the other. You look at from clear-cutting timber and slaughtering all the buffalo back in the day to people now who are the other extreme. They won't let you cut down a tree. They have utter disregard for the people, but for the environment, they are very eager to promote. See, God expects us to respect and take care of his environment or his world. He expects us to take care of what is ours and that of others. And he expects us to take care of the environment. What about respect for our bodies? 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19. The New Revised Standard Version, I'll read to you here in a minute, but 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19. Out of the New King James says, "Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own?" The New Revised Standard Version says this, "Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God, and that you are not your own?" Verse 20, "For here you were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body." Again, we're not our own. Everything is God's, even our body. And that my final point today that I want to talk about, which also kind of brings us back to where we began, is obviously all of these things come back to respect for God. Everything is God. Every person that we interact with is a potential child of Christ, potential spirit being in his kingdom. Let's look at Romans chapter 13, just two more scriptures before we wrap up here. Romans 13 and verse 1. I'll read this to you out of the New American Standard Version. Romans 13, verse 1 through 4. It says, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God." And then in verse 4, "For it," talking about authority, "is a minister or servant of the God to you for good." And then write down for the last scripture. You don't have to turn there. You've heard this many times. But New Living Translation says in Psalm 24, verse 1, it says, "The earth is the Lord's, and everything and everyone in it. The world and all its people belong to him." Brethren, we live in a world that is growing increasingly disrespectful towards God, towards each other, towards the environment, towards everything. There's anger out there. There's disrespect. It's getting a little bit scary if you're out in the world, if you watch the news and what's going on. But we understand and I that we have to have respect, that we need to show it. And I hope that we can see the importance of respect, that showing either respect or disrespect for anything or anyone is in reality showing respect or disrespect for God himself. And I'm going to leave it to everyone in this room as individuals to let you determine how to show respect in the categories we've discussed and the countless others that we haven't today. But I also encourage all of us to work with the young people in our congregation to help them learn how to show respect. And probably the finest way that we can do that is from our example and the words that we say when they listen to us and when they see us. So I hope all of us can see the importance of honoring God by showing him the respect he is due.